Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who I think is most likely to be a cat, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, Windy.
As opposed to a dog, of course.
Yeah, I think I am, yeah. I mean, on account of my height, I don't play centre-back a lot, but when I do,
I think you'd be like socks rolled down, No shin pads. Just like sweeping up.
Yeah, that's it.
Occasionally intercepting if you can be bothered.
One or two touches, never more than that. Very, very sort of Toby Alderweireld, I think. You know, but probably Toby now for Spurs rather than
No long passing though. I don't think you could be bothered to play long passes. I think it'd just be like sideways passing on the goal line, just sideways passing.
I've got some zips to feet going on, but not the big diagonals. Don't have the hamstrings or whatever. So it'll be technical that I can't get the long ping going.
You're just reading the game and occasionally organising the guys around you.
And every time the ball goes over my head, just absolutely dusted for the sprint to the ball, and that's it.
Oh, that went better than I thought it would. Firstly, shout out to David Linmer for having some fun with the intro music. Very much appreciated. And I want to give a shout out to Matt Borum, who's come over for his annual visit from the States and bought me beer, which is just so, so sweet of him. Really, really nice. I still need an accountant, by the way. So if anyone's got a mate who's a Spurs fan and an accountant, please do get in touch. I really, really want to work with someone who's a Spurs fan. It would be nice to pay someone who's Spurs.
This is just you asking for services and getting beer. That's all this is. It's a front, this whole podcast.
No, I want to pay someone. I'm not trying to get it on the cheap. I do want to pay someone, but I'd rather pay a Spurs fan if possible. Nathan, hello. Nuno Video 2 came out last week. Nuno Video 3, is that coming this week?
Probably not this week. I need to think about how I want to do it, what questions I feel are unanswered, unposed. Maybe it will just be more sort of narrative driven. Maybe it will just be like, and then this happened and that was good, and then this happened and that wasn't so good, and that kind of thing. I think I want to assess how much Wolves getting seventh that season was an overachievement, because I think that really is his only possible claim for an overachievement. We talked about this before. But I've also started to poke around players a little bit. I might have had to put Nuno on the back burner for a couple of weeks and get excited about these new toys that we have.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout. I really liked the second video, by the way. Some good work with the tactics board. That was nice, showing how you can achieve the same thing in two different formations, which was really interesting to me. So good work there. Bardi, what have you been up to?
I'm reading at the moment. Going to get Bardi's book club back going, back on the road. I'm about halfway through Ewan Flynn's Sunday League book, which is a great read. Ewan's been doing a lot of writing for The Fighting Cock and for us as well. And I'm going to sit down and have a chat to him about his book and also the kind of intricacies and the very Britishness of playing football on a Sunday down the park. Because I'm not sure if the rest of the world has this kind of custom. So I'm really excited to chat to him about that.
Nice. And I recorded my first podcast straight off the training ground with Chris Summersell since he got his new job, essentially. So Chris is now the under 19 women's coach at Hearts, which is great for him. Really, really pleased for him. They've got an exciting, progressive new female manager coming in for their first team. She will be only the third female manager in the Scottish Women's League, which is surprising, but also it's cool that it's at Hearts and that he'll be getting to work with her. I don't want to get her name wrong, so I'm not going to attempt it. So really massive congratulations to Chris on his new job. We had a good chat about it, and that will be out sometime this week as well. This is all on our Patreon, by the way, patreon.com/theextrainch. We now have over 900 patrons, which is absolutely mind-blowing. Thank you so much. Like, it honestly means the world that people would sign up to our Patreon. Oh my God, it's insane. But what a insanely amazing community we have on the Discord. It's just such a lovely place to spend time chatting to fellow Spurs fans. We're supremely lucky. Thank you. Really mean it. Thank you so much. Boys, we've got some signings to talk about. We've got lots of interesting stuff to talk about. So, two signings already this week. Pierluigi Gollini, which is just the best bit of nominative determinism. Gollini, and he's a goalie. It's just perfect.
No, more like goal-in-y.
Yeah, and Brian Gill from Sevilla, which is a very exciting signing. Let's start with Gollini. Buddy, you're our keeper guy, and you're also our Italian football expert. So this is from Sam Hot Take Reed, who says, is the signing of Gollini signalling that the Hugo reign is coming to an end? And if so, how is Gollini going to be introduced this year? Will it be early ECL games and cups? And what are your projections for the future with this kid? What do you think, Vardy? Is Gollini a Hugo replacement?
I mean, I'm not sure that Gollini is the end for Hugo. I think there's serious question marks. I have serious question marks around Gollini. But what I do see from Gollini is that he's a huge step up from Hart and a huge step up from Gazzaniga. And he's, apart from maybe Vorm in his first season or two, he's probably one of the best second goalkeepers we've had. I do have problems with his technique, especially getting beat from distance. I don't think he's that strong from distance. He does get a few kind of Paul Robinson style goals against him. The one that always stands out is when Atalanta played Real Madrid in the Champions League this season. Mendy, with his right foot, not even his stronger foot, bent it in a soft shot from quite far out. And I thought Gollini's feet movement was bad, and I don't think his dive actually extended. It was a poor goal to concede. There's also his one-on-ones, which are very worrying. He has this, first of all, his timing is kind of bad, that he doesn't come out, and also he doesn't spread himself, which is okay if you've got good timing like Hugo and you're very elastic in kind of spring. But he reminds me a bit of Kepa in that style, that he's not the most physically imposing goalkeeper. So if you're not the most physically imposing goalkeeper, you have to have spot on timing or be a little bit unorthodox, kind of like in the De Gea model. And I don't think he fills the goal enough. So if you're Donnarumma, you've got God-given gifts that you're a giant, and then you just need to add some decent timing in there. If you're not Donnarumma, if you're a Hugo, you have to have exceptional technique and timing. And he doesn't have that, which makes me think he's not our number one going forward. But he's on loan, and it's a way to test him. We can see what happens. It's very risk-free. Hart doesn't seem to be liked by Nuno, so it's a smart transfer in that sense. But I don't think in 3 years' time, Gollini's going to be our number one.
That's really useful analysis. I appreciate that. I know very little about him other than the clips I've seen, so that's great stuff. And Nathan, anything to add?
Yeah, so I had heard similar thoughts on his 1v1 defending from an industry side goalkeeper analyst, and then I also retweeted a thread that said the same thing again. So it's something that a lot of people are picking up on, that he goes to ground quite early and is easy to chip on the 1v1. He totals out as kind of hitting average on his sort of saves versus post shot expected goals. Yeah. But he's a young goalkeeper, so perhaps you think that there's room for improvement there. I haven't got around to sort of watching him see how he is in terms of like his cross collection, his passing, that kind of thing. But purely as a shortstop, he's sort of average or slightly below average. But with some upside because he's 26, is that right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's a bit. It's not the worst signing. Like we signed worse goalkeepers in the last 12 months, but it's not an exciting one either. And I don't think it's the way to go about preparing for Lloris. I've tweeted before, I've spoken before on this podcast. For me, Onana is right there. He has a drug ban. He can't play till February, which means he would come in and automatically be deputy. And like, I think he's an outstanding goalkeeper. He's outstanding with his feet. He's very proactive. He's everything that you want from the modern goalkeeper. He's still on the younger side. He's moving this summer to somewhere. He's relatively cheap because of his drugs ban. That matches perfectly with us because we're not about to kick Hugo out the door in a rush. Now, eventually, it comes to a point where you have to pick one of them, right? End of this season, beginning of the season after, you've got to pick one of them. And I just don't think it's going to be that hard, right? Hugo is still one of the very best shortstoppers in the world. Wow, amazing, incredible still. But, like, that's not going to last forever. That might be another year, another 2 years, another 3 years. But it's like, how long are you going to keep gambling on that being the case for Hugo versus we just know that Onana has a very, very big, very, very long upside. And I think you go, okay, Lloris is still very good, but we have to think more long term. Prioritize what is going to be a first 11 quality keeper, try and get a sum out of Lloris because he is still a very good shortstopper and think in those kind of terms. I don't think that bringing Gallini is likely to be the long-term answer to what we're looking for here, but I don't know, it's also not the greatest priority or the greatest worry.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting as well. I've got a few thoughts on this transfer. I when I originally heard about it, I was a bit annoyed because I was a bit like, why are we bringing in another non-homegrown goalkeeper, and why are we spending 15 million euros on them when, like, we had Gazzaniga right there and he was fine as a backup and we let him go on a free? It just didn't make any sense to me. But this now being a loan and not a permanent transfer,
that's fair, yeah.
A loan with an option, that does change that slightly for me. I don't know if he's going to count as homegrown or not.
I think so.
The reporting, Alistair Gold, who we trust in all things because he's so reliable, he has reported not. However, I know that he was playing for Man U's academy for 3 years before the age of 21. Whether he was registered, three. I don't know. Yeah, so 3 seasons.
Oh, so he wasn't on the book for 3 necessarily. He's
exactly.
On the book for 2.
Exactly. So it will depend on the registration. It will depend on whether he was right on trial at that point. Yeah.
I'll say this, if we have like done our behind the scenes research, got in touch with the FA, and we found out that he can count as homegrown when no one else thinks he is, then this is a really smart bit of business and yeah, fair play to Ferratici. But if we're just sort of hoping that that might be the case and we're bringing in an okay goalkeeper, then it's not so smart. So kind of hinges on that for me, I think.
So the other thing that maybe take note about this transfer was the reporting, I think it was yesterday, about us also trying for David Raya of Brentford, who I think is a really, really good young goalkeeper. Really good. I'm a big fan of Raya. And it seemed like we tried for him, he was too expensive, so we've gone for Gallini. And it makes me wonder if maybe they want to watch Raya or someone like Onana or Melier of Leeds, who I think is brilliant as well, for another season before committing. And Gallini just gives them a bit of leeway to sort of say, well, let's see what happens. We've got someone in on loan who might be really good, might not. There's no skin off our nose if he's no good. He just goes back to his club, almost as if nothing's ever happened. If he's great, then he's great. And we keep him, wonderful. When we get him for like 15 million euros, which is, if he's great, fine, that's cheap. Wonderful. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not so against it. I'm not quite so against it as I initially was. He's also really, he's an interesting character. He's a bright guy. He's really interesting to listen to speak because he's super confident, speaks really well. He's got a bit of the goalie about him. It's a bit crazy. He's had this rap single out, which he released for charity. And that was a bit of fun and not to be taken too seriously. He like, his eyes light up when he talks about it. You can tell he just had a laugh doing it. But he's also really into fashion. I tweeted a YouTube video of him on this sort of fashion YouTube channel. And he's really interesting. He's just really quirky and cool. And I think he'll fit in really well in the squad.
Yeah, I think for all the reasons that you guys have said, that if we need to prioritise certain areas, and right this summer, a goalkeeper's not a priority while we've still got Hugo. Golini is used to position sharing. He with Sportiello at Atalanta, they would quite often mix and match games. So I think he doesn't need a run of games to be kind of match fit. I think it kind of makes sense. And if he does have that that work permit, that if he is counted as homegrown, then great. If not, we send him back after a year, and then we focus on somebody else.
I mean, the interesting thing is he's going to get a lot of games, right? For the in the Conference League, he'll play a fair bit, so we'll get a good idea of what he's like and whether he can be trusted, essentially. So one thing, Bardi, on his style, I think I read somewhere that he's known for being quite good with his feet, as a good at passing, and he's also quite an aggressive goalkeeper, quick off his line and such like. Is that fair to say?
Well, you could be aggressive coming off your line, but if you're no good at it, then it's pointless. And I think that's where he suffers. His passing style, I'm not sure. I don't know. You'd need to have a look at his passing stats. It didn't spring out to me that he's someone who's fantastic with his feet.
Okay. Now, I'm just thinking in terms of having a goalkeeper closer to Lloris, because then it's easier for the defence to cope with a rotating goalkeeper if they're quite similar in style, whereas with Lloris and Hart, like, they were quite different.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. He's definitely closer to Lloris than Hart is. I mean, I'm closer to Lloris than Joe Hart.
Yeah, I think I am, to be fair, as well.
I mean, that was just such a bad free transfer. And the most promising thing is if you start comparing the transfers that have started happening this year compared to what happened the previous year, there's an improvement. And if we're looking at marginal gains and getting 10 more points or 7 more points, however many we need to hit Champions League, these are the kind of transfers we need to be making.
Mm, for sure. So the signing of Pierluigi Gollini has been quickly followed by the announcement of Brian Gill from Sevilla. And I didn't know much at all about him. I knew the name, but I don't think I've knowingly seen him play. I wanted to go on to Y Scout and look at lots of scouting clips of him, but unfortunately Nathan's maxed out our account for the month, so I couldn't do that. So what I did do was check out him on YouTube, which isn't always... It's not always the best way to judge a player, because compilations tend to completely ignore the less positive moments that players have, but it gives you a flavour of what kind of player they are. He's really exciting. He's a really, really exciting player. He's a left-footed winger that plays on the left wing. That's quite unusual. He has played on the right as well, but it definitely is more prominent on the left. He likes to come deep for the ball, receive it to feet, take players on, very sort of direct in the fact that he wants to put balls into the box on a consistent basis. He wants to feed passes into the box and create chances. He also wants to dribble into the box. And his dribbling is absolutely exceptional. Chris Summersell tweeted earlier an image from the Market Insight database, and his progressive runs are basically off the charts, as are the progressive to forward pass ratio and the successful passes into the penalty area, literally like maxing out those bars in lurid green, which is pretty exciting.
We seem to have replaced an aggressive player with a progressive player.
Ooh, nicely done. So what do you think of Brian Gilbody?
I haven't seen a lot of him, but I like him. I just saw one stat. He's made 66 ball carries in La Liga, and only Messi had more. So that, if you're going to buy a player off one stat, buy him. That's the stat.
It looks to me like he will be the best dribbler in our squad. I think that's fair to say. And Nathan, any thoughts?
So in terms of like output, in terms of statistical output, he does model somewhat similar to Lucas. But I think there's much, much more room for upside. Just by watching him, you can see that he's head up a lot more. He's much more interested in finishing his moves with a pass. And I think that the goals and certainly the assists will definitely come for him in time, as that side of his game, the hardest part, sort of develops more. He does lose the ball a lot, dribbling as much as he does. His close control is really impressive. His change of direction is really impressive. For me, what I was interested to find, and what I sort of did my bit of research on last night, is So we bought this left footer who plays wide on the left when what we needed is a width giver on the right, right? We're going to play with a defensive right back. We're going to play with an aggressive left wing back in Reguilon. Therefore, we need the width on the right to be provided. And unfortunately, most of our players want to play either in off the left, or when they do play on the right hand side, they want to play narrow, right? Lo Celso, as a left footer, wants to play narrow in from the right rather than receiving on the touchline. So we bought another left footer. How does that fit? And if you look at what Sevilla want to do with Lopetegui is play with inside wingers and overlapping fullbacks on both sides. So if he was an inside player, surely they'd be more interested in keeping hold of him. So you go away and you watch a couple of his Eibar games, and he plays pretty similarly on the right side of the pitch than he does on the left. Now, obviously, there's going to be more moving, a little more moving inside, because it's just the natural direction with your left foot on the ball. But he tends to want to go outside his fullback and operate in those kind of areas, receive on the touchline. And there's some like there's some diagonality to his dribbling to an extent, but he's not just like, well, he's not who's going the other way. Eric Lamella wants to just like stud roll inside and then look for a three ball every time. He's going to be much more width providing without being just limited to that. So I actually think that he suits the profile really, really well. A really interesting signing, high potential upside. He may not reach like the highest heights, because players of his skill set can reach enormous heights, or they can fall quite way short. So there's quite a lot of variance in his potential development over the next few years. But I think a really exciting signing, an interesting profile for what we're looking for. I think a really good signing.
And what's interesting to me is he is someone who crosses a lot, but also crosses extraordinarily well. He is very, very, very good at finding around in the box. I watched quite a few of his crosses on YouTube, and he shapes them beautifully. And Nathan, as you've already pointed out in some of your work on analysing Nuno, he wants his teams to cross the ball. Lots of crossing.
His 28% cross accuracy is nearly 80th percentile in quality.
Yeah, it's a good matchup for Nuno, right? Let's carry on talking about ins before we do outs, because I want to devote some time to the outs. I think it deserves some time devoted to them. Just to finish off on Brian, I think Nathan made a really good point there, that there's a high upside to the signing. It's a bargain in many ways, because we've not spent a huge amount of money. He's 20 years old. I mean, I tweeted earlier like what the ages of the players that he's closest to, the players who he's closest to in age in our squad, and it's like Josh Aluyemi is closest to him in age. It's mad how young he is. He's such a young player. And he's really, really highly rated in Spain. Has made his debut for the national team. People were talking him up as like a future star for the national team. This is an exciting signing. One of the most exciting signings we've made in quite a while. And it's it makes me certainly feel very good about the upcoming season. Next one, who is, it seems like he's edging closer to an agreement, is Christian Romero, who plays for Juventus but spent last season on loan at Atalanta, as did Gallini. And Bardi, I know you're very excited about this one.
I think he's a brilliant defender. I think he's a defender you can build your defence around for quite a period of time. I think he has everything that none of our defenders have. And I just see this as a real obvious signing. And I think it's so obvious that I'm worried it might not happen. I think somebody else will just gazump us, because I think he's a fantastic player. And I'm totally in on this transfer, even if it means selling Dave, who I really love Davinson, but sell him, sell Dyer, sell all of them.
And the numbers being quoted seem about right to you, sort of 45, 50 million euros?
I think so. I mean, we spent, how much did we spend on Davinson? 42. I think this is a transfer you put in place, and he's there for a long period of time.
He's 23, I think, so pretty young again for a centre back. Nathan, he's a very aggressive defender, more so than any other defender we have.
More so than any defender in the top five European leagues, I think.
Right, okay.
He has a very very specific style that is very well suited to the aggressive style that Atalanta play. He's very good at making that work for him. How well that might translate elsewhere is another question. And I'll go back and I'll look at his Genoa time. We can look at his minutes for Argentina too, where, you know, seems to have gone perfectly well. But I do think that, like, there is some risk going with this one. He's very good at what he does. I hope that what he does is what we want and what we need. I think it makes sense for the way that we want to play. Nuno's sides, you know, his Porto and his Valencia, from losing possession in high areas, are super aggressive in their pressing. And it suits the more defensive styles as well. So, like Nuno's Valencia, they and Wolves too, they set up a lot of the time in this medium or medium high block, and they want to invite the opposition forward a little bit, bring their defenders forwards, and then combat in midfield. And I think that makes sense, that Moreira is going to push up and be sort of an additional midfielder half the time. Tricky one, but yeah, I think exciting.
So there's been another couple of centre-backs linked as well. We know that Joachim Andersen is now going to Crystal Palace, so he's off the agenda. I think that the backup now is Duja Celeta Car, whose name I've just guessed at. It's a Croatian name, and I apologise to any Croatian listeners if I've completely messed that one up. He plays for Marseille. I know very little about him. I don't intend to do much research because I get the impression that it's a backup for if Romero doesn't happen. Do either of you know anything about Celeta Car?
Good in the air.
Yeah. And the other one that's still mentioned regularly is Jules Koundé of Sevilla, who you've spoken about before, Nathan, but that link isn't going away either. It sounds like we want him and he will wait to see who else comes in for him before deciding on what he'll do.
I'm going to get in touch with the friend of a friend of a friend at Real Madrid and tell them that I want him. I don't know. Apparently United are looking at him now as well. So we've you know, we're the backup. I really hope that for some reason other top European sides turn their nose up at him, because it would be Alderweireld all over again, you know? It would be, how the hell have all of these other clubs let us sign this incredible defender? A Koundé Romero defence is quite something, I think.
Then there's a canteen somewhere in Sevilla, and Koundé's going, any news from Manchester? And they're just going, nah, mate, you're off to Tottenham. It's like, shit.
The Takahiro Tomiyasu transfer seems to be on hold because he's picked up an ankle injury, so I would imagine we're waiting to hear what's going on there. But I would again see him as a sort of centre-back rotation.
Yes.
We've read the reports that he's being lined up to play this defensive right-back role, but he absolutely profiles well as a centre-back in my eyes.
Yeah.
So it's looking good. It's looking good in terms of defensive targets. Let's do the outs. Eric Lamela has joined Sevilla as part of the Brian Gill transfer. He's left a very heartwarming message. How to frame this conversation? There's been lots of gatekeeping, I think, about how we should feel about Eric Lamela, which I think is completely unfair. And Lamela's been at Spurs for 8 years, and those 8 years haven't been easy for him at all. He's had some trauma in his life, and he's had some difficult times at Spurs with injury, too many injuries for my liking. I know, because I had ITK at the time, we misdiagnosed an injury when he first joined Spurs, and it massively held up his start to life at the club. That was our fault, not his, and he had subsequent injuries off the back of that. Lamela has not always been everyone's favourite player on the pitch. He can be very frustrating, and sometimes you just want to shake him. But oh my goodness, like, there are very few players I've ever watched play for Spurs that play with the level of intensity that Eric Lamela has done over those 8 years. And for that, he's somewhat become a cult hero. Not a legend, absolutely not a legend, because he's not good enough to be considered a legend. But cult hero is something different. Cult hero is something Freund-like, you know? Lewis Holtby was seen by many as a cult hero. Someone that you take to your heart for reasons beyond what they can achieve on the football pitch. And for me, Eric Lamela fits squarely into that category. couple of highlights for me. The picture of him in the maternity ward. His partner's just had a child. He's watching Spurs on his iPad. And the other moment that stands out was when he made like a really strong challenge against Burnley. The physio comes on to see to the player who he's injured, and Lamela just steals a bottle of water from the physio's bag. It was so perfect. But obviously, like, the two boners are magical Spurs goals as well, and he'll forever be remembered for those. Bardi, how do you feel about Eric Lamela leaving Spurs?
The Eric Lamela we signed from Roma was an utter failure. He didn't do anything that he was supposed to do. But through this wreckage, because he was an absolute car crash for the first year, through this wreckage emerged something that occasionally bordered on an excellent player, occasionally bordered on a good substitute, and he did turn into this kind of cult idol. We would admire the stuff that he would do. He would never actually do what we signed him for, what we needed from him, but he had some brilliant moments. I tweeted today, at the last couple of minutes of the Champions League semi-final, he's trying to nutmeg someone on the corner of the box, which doesn't work, but then he sets off a counter, which we could have scored another goal there had we been a bit smarter. And it's that kind of flipping and flopping between absolute uselessness to brilliance, which is the reason why he's divided Coy's Twitter. And I know why people hate him, because he never became the player that we thought he was going to be. He replaced Bale, which was an impossible task. But then he is held in such high esteem by other people that it almost upsets the other end of the spectrum. I will remember the Rabona he scored in the Europa League. I was right behind it, and I didn't see it, but I knew it. So as he did it, a defender stepped across. So it was the weirdness where, like, how did that go in? So you knew something special had occurred, but I missed it. And it was only when someone got their phone out and you saw it, you're like, oh my days, that's how he got it in from there. And those moments are brilliant. I was also there with the Burnley game where he whipped it in, and that was very Bale-like. You're like, oh, here we go. He's going to explode now. He never did. And then, you know, the assist against Man City, and of course the stamping of Fabregas. He has these iconic moments, but unfortunately his career is not something that we will remember fondly as a success. But that's just very Tottenham, and that's just what he is. You know, he aimed for the stars, but he missed it because he normally slipped over as he shot.
He elbowed the stars, I think.
He elbowed the stars, yeah.
One thing I would say, Bardi, you mentioned there that he's divisive and one side of the argument wind up the other. I think there's slightly more to that. I think the sort of darker, nastier edges of the Spurs fan base were quite mean-spirited about Lamela from quite early on. So he would get nicknamed Pamela, which there's something distasteful about that joke generally, not least because it doesn't even work, because like he has all the stereotypical like masculine elements to him. He likes fighting, so it doesn't work anyway. But also there was a bit of the sort of Graham Souness very Latin element to it as well. People didn't like the shit housing, and then suddenly other people were like, hang on, this is good. Why do you not like this? This is the good stuff. And Poch very much embraced it, and he became Poch's general in some ways. Not just the shithousing. I think there's something to be said also for how Lamela as a player genuinely could change the tempo of a match coming off the bench. It was absolutely insane sometimes how he would come on and have an instant impact. And that wouldn't always be a lasting impact, and he wouldn't always get a goal or an assist, but you would notice the Spurs team play faster, play harder, because Eric Lamela was on the pitch. And I think that's an unusual trait to have, and I think it's something we will need to find a way to replace in the squad. But that's why I think one side of the fan base sort of took him to their hearts slightly more as a result of the abuse he was getting from this sort of nasty side. Mm. Nathan, any thoughts on Eric Lamela?
Yeah, man, I'm going to miss him. I don't think that, like... I think that he's unique, you know. I don't think there are other players really like him. Maybe there are if you head over to River Plate or whatever. But I just think that like that mixture of like twinkle toads, through ball focus, kind of okay. Sometimes he can be frustrating because there's not much guile to what he's going to do a lot of the time. But then combine that with just like a nasty, like violent. but like also like really getting it, like in a summer where we're talking about like supposed boyhood Spurs fan Harry Kane, where he's going to play in a few months' time. Eric Lamella is like fully coys against the odds with no like great reason to do so. He's just really bought in to Spurs in a massive way, to the extent where reportedly he has to be persuaded to leave us to go play in the Champions League next season, you know, because he really likes Tottenham. He likes living in London. He likes everything about the club, you know, making Santa dress in blue with his custom Tottenham PlayStation controller.
Oh yeah,
you know, he's Spurs through and through, and we have to respect him in that way. We have to remember him in that way. We have to be so grateful for him. He briefly touched on like elite expected assist numbers in his second season, and then he was like a decent squad player from like 2017 to 2019. Injuries obviously doing him a lot of harm in that time, and then also at that point he falls behind like Dele Eriksen's son, which just means that even when he's fit, he's gonna struggle to see sufficient game time, and he's someone who wants a string of games, and that undermined his performance as well. But I think that there's definitely a lot of talent there. I definitely think that he's still got a good few years in him at Sevilla. I think that's likely to be a good match for him. But yeah, just what he represents, like we will miss having that character in the squad, definitely.
I do think if you go back now and time travel all the way back to 2013, and you watch what he was doing with Totti at Roma, and you could see that the player that he should have been. But I think injuries really did take their toll on him, and he had to adjust how he played.
Yeah.
He lost that bit of acceleration. He lost that bit of strength, and he had to redefine how he played. And I think he found a role that suited him, and to the best of his ability, he tried his goddamn best.
Yeah.
And there's been plenty of players we've had at Spurs who have perhaps been better, but haven't even tried a fraction as hard as him. And I did tweet back in 2019 that he's our worst ever transfer. If you look at money paid out according to like output and everything else, perhaps there is that argument to be made. But he did try his damnedest, and I'll respect him for that. And I harbour no ill feelings towards him.
So from one important player from the last decade leaving to another, it looks like Toby Alderweireld is heading to Qatar to play for Al Duhail. This, to me, is an indication that Alderweireld understands that he is done at the top level of this sport, that he is just going for one last payday. Fair play to him for doing that. Absolutely no issue with that at all. I personally felt that he was our best centre-back last season. I personally think he is the best centre-back. When he's at his best, I think he's the best centre-back I've seen in my lifetime at Spurs. It's close between him and Ledley, who I absolutely adored. One of my favourite players of all time. I think Alderweireld, at his absolute peak times, was just unbelievable. And like Nathan said, we were so lucky to hang on to him to sign him in the first place, and then to hang on to him for as long as we did when he had this release clause in his contract. I'm really sad to see Alderweireld go, but I think it's absolutely the right time, and we do need to move on from him at this point. But I think in the same way there's a lot of fondness for Lamella from large swathes of the fan base, there will always be a lot of fondness for Alderweireld, not because he's a character in the same way, but because of what he did on the pitch. It's kind of the opposite of Lamella in a sense, because he's quite quiet off the pitch. You don't really know a lot about him. We got a glimpse into his character on All or Nothing. But he's someone who led by example. He's not the loudest player. He's not really an organiser or a motivator. But he led by example, and the partnership he had with Jan Vertonghen, I don't think we'll see that matched anytime soon. You don't get a centre-back partnership as good as Toby and Jan for as long as them too often. We lucked out there. And I'm going to be sad to see him go. Obviously, wish him all the best. Bardi, anything you'd like to say about Toby?
Yeah, he's an absolute class defender who played a lot of games, man. He had one season that was a little bit affected, but otherwise he was always hitting 30 league games a season. He was really consistent. His legs started to go. And you spoke about his partnership with Vertonghen. That's a partnership that goes to international football as well. You're not going to see a partnership like that on international stage. He was a beautiful defender, really gifted. He didn't seem the biggest, but he was a really imposing player. And his time had come. I thought last season he did fine in a kind of low block defence, but his time had definitely come. The hunch was getting the best of him. And you saw at the Euros that his legs had gone. His brain was maybe still there, but his legs are done.
That's completely fair, I think. Nathan, I know you were a big admirer of Alderweireld as well.
Yeah, I just think that we have to remember his best when we were talking about him accurately as perhaps the best defender in the world, right up there with the very best centre-backs in the world. He's dropped off since, sort of quite gradually and for a while now. He had that injury. He's obviously missed Jan Vertonghen. But like, yeah, what an incredible servant, incredible purchase he's been, everything else. I think that he can go on to the Qatari League and sort of go back to feeling that way and get a nice payday out of it. Fair play to him. Signing a new contract as soon as Mourinho walked through the door was a bit of a weird one, especially now in retrospect that we're now moving him on. But just an incredible defender. His coolness, yeah, his calmness in defence, in 1v1s, his patience, his sort of cool-headedness and his sort of fast thinking in those moments is really what makes him stand out as one of the greatest 1v1 centre-backs I've really ever seen. Just keeping his body between the ball and the goal is the simplest thing in the world, but he really excelled at that one thing. His long passing, obviously incredible. The thing we're talking about Alderweireld is that you've got to talk about him and Vertonghen together, and that partnership obviously ended a while ago, but it was the two of them, three, still a sort of a valid partnership there. But we were really blessed with an incredible pair of centre backs for a considerable period of time, and we've got quite a bit of spending to do if we want to recreate something like that again, don't we?
He wasn't the showy defender. Vertonghen was always much more of the last ditch tackle, the sliding block and stuff like that. And I think that's just a testament to how well he read the game, that he didn't have to do those big grand gestures.
Absolutely. And I think the comment about the contract, Nathan, is worth just briefly revisiting, because I don't know about you, but I feel like we've got a good fee for him. For a player who's 32, is not the same since injuries. He's coming up to, I think, 1 year left in his contract this. And it sounds like we've got somewhere between 10 and 15 million pounds for him. That seems about right. So that seems like a decent fee,
return. Very good fee. Like, just to get his wages off the books at this stage just is good. To get a good fee on top of that for a 32-year-old defender is pretty exceptional, to be honest.
Yeah. So other players are being linked with moves away. Harry Winks. There's talk that Everton might quite like Harry Winks. I think pretty much everyone's like happy for that move to happen. It just makes sense. He needs a fresh start. We need a fresh start. I'm completely happy with this. Nathan, you've put something in the running order which slightly concerns me. Skip to Leeds.
Yeah, I need to make sure I'm allowed to say this. I might have to come back and edit this out later. anyway, but don't worry about it, Windy, is how I'm going to start this off. Basically, Bielsa really likes him, really wanted him this season, tried to persuade Spurs to consider letting him go either on loan or whatever with Phillips moving into a number 8 role following the Euros, I guess. But Spurs say no, we want to give him a chance here next season. So we are holding on to a young player who Bielsa really, really fancies.
Yes. I like. Aurier has been linked with a move to PSV Eindhoven, which is interesting.
I don't know how real that link is. That's proper internet Twitter chat, but I'm not sure how real that is. But yeah,
he's previously been linked with Milan.
Yeah, well, his agent is like running around trying to find him a club because he wants to go. We want him to go. PSG have signed Hakimi, a player who's 3 times his quality, and now it's like, where am I going to play in a few weeks' time? So let's get some rumours in the paper about PSV to hope that whips up some interest potentially from PSV or whoever else.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of that one. It's scraping around trying to find someone who's going to offer us a bit of a fee for Aurier, which might be a challenge. I think we And hopefully that Paratici is going to give us sort of the change in tone on this one and accept a cut price to get him off our books.
That's the key, isn't it? So the other remaining players to talk about, Cameron Carter-Vickers is being strongly linked with a move to Celtic, which I think would be a good move for him, because they've just sold Aya. I think it's Aya, isn't it, to Brentford.
Oh, Aya, sorry.
Is it Aya?
Christoph Aya, yeah.
Aya. So they need a replacement for Aya, and they're looking at Carter Vickers, apparently. I've not seen any rumoured moves for Lucas, which is disappointing to me, but there's links with Sissoko leaving, which I think, again, just makes sense from every possible perspective.
Where's Sissoko going?
Rumours of Nice liking him.
That makes sense.
But other clubs too. There's various rumours about Sissoko. I'm intrigued by the fact that we've managed to make so many exits happen. Paratici is getting lots of praise. There are many memes doing the round. People are saying constantly, "This man never sleeps. He breathes football. He's on his phone constantly. He's working all the hours that God sends."
And he uses wired headphones, so his AirPods don't get hacked, is one of the latest things I heard. What is that about?
I mean, he's just a dad, isn't he? That's the reason he's using wired headphones.
They're the ones that come in the box.
Yeah, exactly. What I will say is this. I think Paratici is essentially doing his job right now. However, if Paratici managed to sell Charles Joseph John Hart for a fee, then I will be all in on all of the Godfather memes, because that would be a remarkable achievement. What do you think, Nathan? Is Paratici some sort of hero that deserves all this praise that he's currently getting?
Yeah, so there was this piece, was it in The Guardian or was it The Athletic, talking about his... you know, his insane work ethic and lots of excitement about the fact that he works, you know, 23 hours a day, 365 days a year. And I just think that it's, insane. I just think it's like,
it's not healthy to be praising someone for that.
Not healthy to be praising that kind of thing, right? Firstly, because like those aren't the standards that we should be setting for ourselves as humans, right? Those aren't healthy. But it's also not like the best way to get like performance out of people, right?
Exactly.
People need rest to make the best decisions. And I'm sure that like the reporting is a massive exaggeration anyway, because it's like if he's in his office for, you know, 10 hours a day, still too much, and then his phone is on and he's available to call for a deal if one comes up in the evening, and that's kind of a different matter. So I'm sure that he's on call, and I think that that's too much, you know, 24/7. I think that's too much anyway. He should have like administrative assistants who can help him with that. So the whole discussion around it is kind of disturbing, frankly. The work is coming on pretty strong this summer. We wait until the end of the summer to say, hey, he did move on all these players. Hey, he did bring in all these players. Until then, we can't get too carried away. But the signs are pretty promising. It's definitely the sensation is very different this summer to previous summers.
It just supports the argument that we've been making for several years that we need a director of football. It's been so obvious. We've needed to clear out some of the deadwood for literally three seasons. That's six windows, and it's finally happening, and that is very, very pleasing. A couple more big talking points, I think, before we touch on Colchester briefly. Let's start with the less happy one, because then we've got something happy to move to. This whole fiasco with Harry Kane being on the front page of The Sun, thanks to his brother Charlie telling someone something at a wedding, and the sort of the bad vibes that brought about. Bardi, how are you feeling about this Kane saga? I know we'll call it a saga now.
I mean, I'm at a position, if Kane wants to go, then pay the money and he can go. Of course, it's very sad and everything else, but I'd rather we just moved on with our lives. And if this is how the Kane family are going to get out of Spurs, then it's just not very classy. And perhaps Charlie Kane isn't the classiest person. Perhaps he shouldn't be managing the best striker in the world. He needs to realise he's nothing else apart from a potato farmer, and just leave being an agent to other people. If Kane wants to go to Manchester City, then that's fair enough. If that's his ambition to become a stat on Manchester City's oil-stained football history, then fair enough for him. If he wants to stay at Spurs and try and do something, try and achieve the impossible, I've said many times that I'm all in for that. But if he wants to leave, then goodbye, give us the money and we'll move on with our lives.
Nathan, you've always been fairly... Oh, there's the ice cream van again. Nathan, you've always been fairly resolute in the fact that you think Kane will stay because no one will be able to afford him. Are you still feeling so confident after this story made the front page of The Sun?
Well, I'm feeling confident in a different way, which is that if the reported figure of 160 million comes up, I'm feeling pretty positive about receiving that kind of money for a player of his age and injury record, to be honest. Do I think that City will put that money up? Maybe. I think it's more likely he stays, to be honest. But I don't know. Maybe Charlie's been dropping the ITK at a wedding. He wears a suit to work. He has one client. It's his brother. He has an office. He dresses up in a full three-piece. has an office specifically for just his one client, his brother.
He's got the same work ethic as Harry.
Yeah.
His preparation is immaculate.
First person at the office in the morning, last to leave. Also the only person who's ever there because it's just a little, little studio he's rented out.
It's a converted shed, isn't it? Let's be honest. He's got two rooms in his converted shed. One is his office, which is also a shrine to his brother Harry.
Yep.
And the other is a bar. And he probably spends most of his time in the bar.
Yeah.
Charlie Kane.
I can imagine he's a bit like Johnson in Peep Show when he sets up his home office. He doesn't even make the bed, just gets out of bed and gets cracking on his laptop. I mean, I like Nathan says, I'm not sure Pep's going to go for this because it's a lot of money and it's not like Pep Guardiola's going, oh, okay, if I had Harry Kane, I'd win the Champions League. He's not that kind of manager. He has a belief and a philosophy around how a team should play. And I don't think he's just going to go and buy Harry Kane and that's his sister. He's going to have to change how his team plays, in my opinion. And I don't see him doing that. The last time he tried to change a team to fit in a massive number nine, it didn't work well. But of course, they're very different personalities between Harry Kane and Ibrahimovic. But I don't see it happening. If it does, just get it done early and we can all move on. Because that first game of the season of watching Harry Kane play against us is going to be very strange.
Well, he's not playing that game either way, apparently. He's taking out the rest, which I'm really glad to see. Most of the speculation around this is that, like, oh, he's avoiding the game because we don't know who he's going to play for or everything else. I just think that, like, it's really good that he's getting the rest because he needs it. Even if he plays for City, I still think I'm still kind of glad a little bit to see him get the rest, maybe. Wendy, do you think that we're already spending the Harry Kane money?
It definitely seems that way. The problem is it's also speculative because we've just assumed that all football clubs, all top-level football clubs, are going to be poor this summer because of COVID and the lack of revenue. The thing is, we've sold quite a few players already. We're selling more. We can probably afford to make some decent signings, knowing that we're also getting wages off the books.
Mm.
So it's not necessarily the Kane money, but yeah, I mean, come back to me if we sign... Koundé as well as Romero, because yeah, then enough. I'd be like, yeah, we probably are spending the Kane money if that's the case.
Yeah, all right.
And the thing with Kane is obviously I want him to stay. I'd love to have the league's best player in our team for next year, a team that I'm feeling happier and happier about. I'm feeling more optimistic about as the days go on, as the transfers roll in. Kane obviously elevates us and makes us a much, much better side. So it'd be wonderful if he stayed, but 160 million is an insanely good fee if he were to leave, and a fee that we should be very happy with in terms of what it would allow us to do with the rebuild. So on the upside, we had the lovely news this week that Son Heung-min signed 4-year contract until 2025. So there was a video that was released to accompany this Son contract signing, and it involved him and a notice board of photographs of some of his best moments in a Spurs shirt. And it is one of the most joyous videos I've seen Spurs ever release. He is a treasure of a human being. We are so lucky to have a player who's genuinely wonderful to watch on the pitch, but also just like the most decent, adorable, beloved footballers we've had at our club ever. And I'm so happy that he signed. I know from an accountant perspective, it makes so much sense to sell him at his peak, at his prime, get some money through the door onto the balance sheet while we can. But from a pure fan perspective, I'm so glad that Son has signed this contract. I love him. He's again another player who cult hero comes to mind, but he's more than that as well because he's such a wonderful, wonderful footballer and has been responsible for so many happy moments. Bardi, are you feeling like me, elated that Son signed a contract, or do you think we should have sold him?
I'm going to be positive here, and I'm happy he's signed a contract. He's a lovely player, scores some great goals, and it's good news, man. It's good. Had we lost Kane and Son in one transfer window, then that would have been bad news. But keeping him is good. It's a good thing. I like him. I hope this season he has less of those kind of bad patches and is a bit more consistent. But he's a great player, and I'm very happy he's staying.
Yeah, and the other thing, Nathan, of course, is if we are losing Kane, then you need Son's productivity. You're going to need those goals and assists.
Yeah, I mean, Son is getting on. He's you know, got to be worth quite a bit of money on a potential sale. There are reasons why you could criticise new contracts, but I think that if we're considering selling Harry Kane, then you keep the other, right? You don't get rid of both at once. We may well end up keeping both, and then it becomes a little bit of an issue next year or whatever. But I mean, I'm just not in a rush to see some go, even though it makes sort of sense. And I do think that, like, he's one of those players. He has sort of the, you know, Milner syndrome, where everyone says how underrated he is. But also, would he command the fee that his output deserves? Probably not. Plus, you know, all of the Korean fans that you bring in when you sign Son to your club. So maybe the smartest thing is to keep him here for a while longer.
Yeah, also, you know, he's 29. He doesn't look 29. Like, Wayne Rooney, when he was 29, looked 40. Harry Kane, when he hits 30, is going to look old and move like an old person. He's still got plenty of spring left in his legs. He's got another easy... I reckon by the end of his contract, he'll still be dashing around the pitch. He's a boy that looks after himself.
That is absolutely correct. I think he's in really good shape for a 29-year-old.
And I mean, it's not like 29 is old. It's still very young, but yeah.
In terms of strikers, though, it's sort of getting towards the end, isn't it? At the elite level.
For pace-based strikers, yeah.
I suppose the other thing about Son is that he has got variety to his game as well, so hopefully he can adapt as he gets older and perhaps just a yard of pace. We should talk a little bit about the Colchester match. I mean, there's not a huge amount to say about it, but... it was interesting to see Pascocci play right back again, a centre back by trade, who has played left back for his national team, but I thought he did a good job again at right back. Delhi got on the score sheet, as did, is it Son and Lucas, I think? God, it feels so long ago.
That seems about right.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and a good team performance, really promising team performance. Skip made his first appearance of pre-season, looked really nice, played an incredible volleyed pass cross-field, which was just insane. And then Niall John came on in the second half and had another really promising display in midfield also. Anything either of you would like to add on the Colchester match?
Revenge is ours.
Parrott nearly had a brilliant goal, did everything right, but didn't quite get the shot. Well, it was blocked, I think, wasn't it? Didn't quite get the separation for the shot. Is that right?
Yeah.
But I mean, basically, that game is like, that is what Nuno's football looks like when it works. That is what we're in for. I think that's a pretty strong preview, despite, you know, previously saying, we talked about this in the last episodes, that like it's just fitness. There's no tactics going on at the moment. Like, that is wrong. That is what Nuno ball. That is what it looks like. That's how it works. So yeah, direct attacks, long balls over the top, quick 1-2s through the middle of midfield. Yep. That's what we're looking at.
Some good signs for sure. God, there's been so much to talk about that we've filled an hour without even going to questions. So what we'll do is bank your questions, and maybe next week we won't sign two players and sell one more, and we can actually get around some of them. Thank you for sending them in as ever. It's much appreciated. And we'll be back next week with more of the same.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.